The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement IRA Show, EDU edition today. On today's show, we're going to have a tax focus. So we've invited Bob on here with me. Jim's off doing some additional training at the his semi-annual Ed Slot group training. But today's show, I've got Bob on. We're going to talk a bit about Roth conversions in the context of what we call 210 considerations. Sometimes I'm sure you've heard, if you've been a podcast listener for a while, Jim talks about 210, which refers to considerations for the couple when both are alive. That's the two. Tax considerations for the survivor, that's the one, and tax considerations for the zero when both of you are gone and beneficiaries are inheriting your assets. The reason why we look at it that way is that decisions you make to benefit from a tax perspective, one of those three entities, if you will, sometimes isn't the best approach for one of the other entities. So you have to kind of prioritize, and we'll get into that a little bit, but we have a couple questions that have come in this topic area, so we thought this would be a good time for Bob and I to get together and chat a little bit about it. So welcome back, Bob. We haven't been on the show with you for a while, so nice to see you again.
Yeah, I'm back, and it is nice to be back in the office. I've been kind of holding up at my home office for a while, and that does work out great. But recording-wise, it's nice to come in and have the technology here and kind of visit with everybody a little bit and do a little catch up.
Yeah, nice. So I know that you have the questions, and this isn't technically a Q&A show, but we're going to use the questions to kind of prompt discussion in this area. So why don't you fill us in on what the first person was asking, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Okay. The first person, he's a listener and a resident from Ohio. And he goes on to say he's been recently diagnosed with it's a medical condition, and he has 2 to 4 years of expected remaining life. So he's got life's curveball kind of thrown at him. I am 63, and my wife is 62. We have been retired for 6 years. We have about $5.3 million in savings. And that is roughly broken down 750,000 Roth, about $3.5 million in traditional qualified accounts, always taxable accounts, and about $1 million in brokerage, maybe taxable accounts. Mm-hmm. And we are both receiving Social Security. So we have been making Roth conversions and keeping our income at the top of the 24% bracket. So what they've been doing is they look at their income for the year, taxable income for the year, towards the end of the year, and they are calling up their custodian, and they're moving dollars from traditional IRA account to the Roth IRA account in the amount to bring themselves to the top of the 24% bracket, which for married filing jointly is roughly $326,000 of taxable income. Would it be better? So this is the kind of the question part of it. Would it be better for us to increase Roth conversions to raise our income? And he says to the top of the 26% bracket, and we'll come back to that, or more, considering my wife will be pushed into a higher singles tax bracket and will not be able to make as high of a Roth conversions in the future. We want to maximize passing an inheritance on to our two daughters and their families, and the families will likely be in higher income tax brackets than we are now. And in summary, we want to weight higher conversions versus higher Medicare payments due to higher income, future tax increases for my wife as she will be single, higher tax brackets for my daughters, future tax increases from Washington, and future RMDs. So that's a good summary of everything that you're kind of should be thinking about when you're in a situation like this or just trying to reduce that tax burden to the 210, the 210 analysis that you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show. And clearly they're focusing on the surviving spouse, and the zero, because they brought up their daughters, and they're looking at taxes as a family unit. And that when we're bringing on clients for tax planning and Roth conversion analysis and withdrawal strategies, we always have to understand that what is the important, where does that importance lie? Because how we approach things and our results are going to be a little bit different under each of those three scenarios.
Mm-hmm. And they brought up a good point that a lot of times it's difficult to fold into this type of analysis, but at least they're addressing it, and they've made at least appears some conclusion about the potential or expected tax brackets or profile of the beneficiaries. When we talk about the zero, it's going to be very different if the zero is a low wage earner, say a kindergarten teacher or something that is not usually as highly paid as a chemical engineer, for instance, and kind of having an anticipation of that. But depending on the age of your kids and where they are in the career path, it might be very difficult to determine that. So that's just another one of these variables. But if I try to take some notes as you went by here and listen, but you can confirm if I heard correctly, that they're expecting beneficiaries ultimately to be in higher tax brackets, so high wage earners themselves. Is that what they said?
That's what they said. Yeah. So their daughters and perhaps their son-in-laws, they're together combining, making enough, enough earned wages and income currently to be in high brackets.
Right. Then they brought up IRMA, the Medicare surcharges. They are reaching the age where that will be an issue. The year that you're 63 is the tax year that in where you turn 63 is going to be the first year that will have an effect on your Medicare premiums when you turn 65 and go on Medicare. We've talked a lot in the past. Some people might not have heard that, but the way the IRMA Medicare premium surcharges work is they look at your tax information from the most recent available tax return. Turns out that it's the tax year 2 years prior that is readily available on January 1st when they need to set your Medicare premiums for the year. And so that's what I mean by the age 63 tax year. You mentioned he's 63, she's 62, is going to have an impact here. And they're, if they continue on their current path, they're blowing through the bottom couple of your IRMA tiers. They're actually in the third premium tier, adding for the couple. I know that he's going to go on Medicare, looks like, depending on when in the year, she's 62, turning 63, et cetera. I'm making some guesses here. But if they were both on Medicare and recognized income, had AGI, or more specifically, modified AGI, Maggie, up to that $326,000 figure that you mentioned, that is going to put them squarely in that third bracket, almost into the fourth payable bracket. And if they stay in that third IRMA tier, it adds $6,700 a year to their premiums between the two of them, if you look at both Part B and Part D surcharges that occur with IRMA. So that's something that obviously has to be thrown into the mix as far as variables go. But oftentimes the tax savings are in excess of that. And even if the tax savings and the IRMA offset one another, the one thing I do point out to people is it's still worth considering, because at least you lock in and prevent yourself from being exposed to future tax increases if you believe that's likely. So don't ignore doing conversions just because the IRMA that you expose yourself to offsets the tax savings that you're expected to get by doing these conversions now versus later. Because I think knowing what you're going to pay, especially in an environment where it's likely over your retirement, that especially in the upper income tiers, that rates are going to go up, I think that's a reasonable assumption to make. So I just thought I'd throw that out a little bit as well. So,
yeah, that's all. That's great. I mean, that's exactly kind of how you have to start thinking about the Roth conversion and increasing your income and creating additional IRMA surcharges. And sometimes, you know, like the $6,700 in a year, in 1 year, IRMA, because it is a year-by-year tax or surcharge, it's looked at every year. So sometimes running a lot of money through in 1 year, it's kind of like biting the bullet, and you'll pay that surcharge, and that surcharge, the higher the dollar, you know, the higher the dollars you run through that Roth conversion, that surcharge becomes lower of an amount. And if it's only for 1 year, sometimes it still makes sense to do that. Mm-hmm. And IRMA is one of those fees or hidden taxes that over time can really add up, but it's not terribly bad in 1 year compared to sometimes the Roth conversion amount, if it makes sense.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are so terrified of IRMA, or they're so sensitive to it, that they don't want to consider any conversions or distributions that would cause them to go up into any of those IRMA brackets. And I looked at something for somebody not too long ago, and the third tier, filling income from 218 to 272, just to bring out an example because I did it recently, the 4226, there's between 218 and 272, that's $44,000 of extra income that you would recognize in there. If you saved just one percentage point of taxes on that, you have offset the IRMA. So if you can, you know, even at 1% savings compared to what you might be expected to take it out at and experience rates in the future on distributions or conversions, it's a wash pretty much at 1% point savings. And if you can get, you know, better than that, it's still a net savings, even though you're paying the IRMA. So I think people are overly sensitive a lot of times to IRMA, but it's definitely worth throwing into the mix as one of the variables. How would you, or maybe better, unless you're wanting to go a different direction with this, how do we, AKA you, within our office, deal with this kind of, you know, all these variables? How is it that we determine what's the way to go?
Well, fortunately, we have a good software program, because in any of these situations, everybody is unique. And the amount of data that has to be looked at over a 25-year period or longer, there's just so much information, so many things impacting the taxes and tax rate changes and investment returns and income and spending. All this information has to be kind of processed, and then each case is unique, and we look at each one after we get the strategies, the program kind of kicks out, and then we start looking at each strategy and kind of diving down into which one kind of makes sense. But from a higher level theoretical approach in this condition or this situation is, you know, and his question is about going up to the next tax bracket, which would be 32%, which the 32% bracket is a fairly narrow bracket. It's not very deep. It's about 88,000. And then the following bracket is 35%. And so when we're looking at these 32 and 35% brackets, we're talking about some pretty high tax rates. I typically don't convert into these rates, but that's just, again, a typical situation, and everybody is unique. And so from a theoretical approach, if we're going to convert, say, to 35% in a year or two for two or three or four years, and we're going to pay 11% more tax on those conversions, you know, because we're already at the 24. Now we're going to go up through the 35. So we're going to pay 11% more. Is that better than the long-term tax impact that's going to occur to the surviving spouse who might easily live 25 or 30 more years? So there's a lot of years out there that we have to look at and say, you know, what is going to be a little bit better here? And then, and ultimately look at the daughters, the beneficiaries, and plan for that too. And to give you an idea, just a kind of a quick analysis early on, they're converting now through the top of the 24% bracket. Well, if you continue those conversions from a married person, married filing joint return, to a single person return, that tax difference is $23,000. So it will, for the surviving wife, each year they try to convert the top of the 24% bracket will cost $23,000 more plus their state.
For her, if they do it when she's a single person versus as married.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you looked at that over 5 or 6 years, you know, you're talking about in excess of $100,000 in taxes, just to try to get the RMDs down for her, because they're not going to go away, so that her taxes over a longer period of time are better. So that $120,000, you know, that is easily, you know, potentially worth doing a lot larger conversion in 1 or 2 year period here while they have the advantage of the brackets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that people are oversensitive to is biting the bullet and paying the taxes. It's on one hand, people recognize when they're doing this type of analysis and they're thinking about these things, which leads them to ask these types of questions, which are excellent. They've got it on their mind, and they realize they're going to pay taxes. But when they're then faced with pulling the trigger on paying a massive amount of taxes this year, it just goes so against their nature, because for so long they've been working so hard to do their taxes every year and minimize the tax rather than voluntarily pay this huge amount of what, you know, compared to other years where they pay taxes, it's going to be a huge amount. And you've got to be looking at all these variables to look at the numbers, because you might come to the conclusion that Bob just alluded to. You save within just maybe a 5 year period well over $100,000 by doing things as a couple versus as a waiting for the single survivor to maybe do this to try to prevent a huge issue, especially now with the 10-year payout requirement from these traditional accounts that the daughter will have to face. If the daughter and the son-in-law are both doctors or engineers or something, they're already at high brackets, and then you're going to dump $3 million maybe on them or more if it's grown. And has to be distributed within a 10-year period, that's going to be a horrific tax situation for them. But just in 5 years of a survivor, that huge amount might, you might make perfect sense then to pay $70,000, $80,000 of extra tax on top of what you were already planning in a year where you're both alive to get this ball rolling on getting the money out of these traditional accounts before a single person or a daughter beneficiary faces the music tax-wise on these. So I just know this because in the past we've done some calculations for people, and when we show them the justification for, okay, you should do this massive conversion, and yeah, you're going to have this six-digit tax bill, it just, you know, their heart stops. And it takes a while to, and some never get convinced. They just can't bring themselves to do it. They're somehow hoping that tax rates are going to go down even more, or they're just in a bit of denial, if you will. If you look at it rationally and the numbers all make sense and you've considered all the variables, it can, especially in a case like this where you have, they have one variable that is unfortunately a bit less variable than for most couples. There's this condition the husband has where there's a real reason that life expectancy is short, that most people have, this is an unknown for them. And so here it actually provides a little clarity to the path that they should be wandering down, but there's still so many moving parts that you've got to have some kind of tool that's going to bring all this stuff together and compare and contrast all the different paths that could be walked. There's many, many paths. I don't know. How many hypotheticals does the software usually spit out? Isn't it in the 30s or something?
You know, actually, it was, and they came out with an updated version here a few months ago, and we're up to about 100 now. 100
scenarios. Oh, my gosh. So essentially what Bob's saying is this software takes all the information and then walks 100 paths or strategies for taxes as far as distributions and conversions and up to different brackets and considering IRMA and all these other variables and AMT and NIT and all the things that can happen as you recognize income over some period of time, and even more variables, obviously, to get to 100, but that gives you an idea. And that's the beauty of a tool like this, is it you couldn't manually walk these 100 paths easily at all. You know, technically, you could do it by hand, 100 of them, but you better have a really good CPA to try to do something like that. And it would take forever and be super expensive. Luckily now, like with most of this kind of stuff, software comes to the rescue and does this. But you can be then assured. I think a lot of the question for a lot of people is, what if there's a path I'm not considering? You know, in the past, we might consider 5 paths that were common, and we talk about those before we had a tool like this. Now with this tool, there's probably not many paths that are left undiscovered or unwalked in the hypotheticals. So you can have, at least if you take an approach like we do, some comfort in knowing that you've probably analyzed practically every possible scenario under current tax law. And then you can even, I know with the software before, and I'm sure that's still the case, you can put in hypothetical changes to the tax law down the road, right? Tax increases or decreases and things like that into the hypotheticals, correct?
That's true. We can we can make some various assumptions with the tax laws going forward. You know, currently we know the 2018 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to expire in 25. And in 26, we go back to the 2017 brackets and rates. So we know that's currently set up to happen. So our software starts with that scenario. It says, okay, this is what we know is going to happen, or what we expect to happen based on current legislation. And then we can say, well, what happens if tax rates increase in 2022, which is a scenario that, you know, a lot of people are floating around that could happen. Or what if they change in 26, they go back, but they go back even higher than they were in 2017. Another scenario that we can add to the mix, and all of those point towards recognizing income now and lessening your income in the future.
Yeah, I'll point out one other benefit I've seen from being able to examine all these different paths is that oftentimes our gut is telling us, boy, this couple or individual should be really concerned about this. They should really be concerned about IRMA, or they should be really concerned about when they hit RMD age and the federal taxes at that level or something. We've kind of identified what we think is the issue. And then we run this, and it turns out, as we look at it, that what we were concerned about actually doesn't play a huge part. And something we didn't even think about is a major deal. That's something that could really throw a monkey wrench into the overall plan. So I think that's a huge benefit as well. And it also addresses the concern I think a lot of people have of, you know, obviously we don't know the future. We don't know what tax rates will be. We don't know exactly what you're going to make on your investments 5 years from now and all these different things. So some people say, well, it's not worth doing these because we don't know perfectly how all these things are going to turn out. Well, I would say there's still value in identifying what to worry about. And what I mean by that is some things, whether they end up being higher or lower than expected, really don't affect the overall situation that much. We can kind of ignore those and not try to control or protect against those. Other variables, if they go up a little bit, they're a little higher than expected or a little lower, create a massive difference in the overall results. And that then identifies, you know, this issue here, there's a big flashing red light on it. This is what we need to be concerned about, because if this goes the wrong direction, we're going to get hammered tax-wise. So that's what we identify to mitigate. That's the true power of this kind of scenario-based analysis for taxes, which is woefully under-examined in the retirement planning world. More and more people are doing it, but when I say more and more, you know, it's still a micro, you know, a small percentage of the overall people out there doing retirement plans. And it definitely isn't something you can just plunk in a few basic numbers and let the software do all the work and it spits out the magic answer. It's not that simple by any means. If you'd see the types of stuff that Bob's got to do, the tool in the software is great, but he's got to do a whole lot of consideration and thought about how to use the tool appropriately. So it's not just the tool, it's the user of the tool as well.
It does take both, and it takes an understanding. Each one of these, when I program in, each one of them, the results, I can usually predict what's likely to come out, and I'm pretty accurate with what I'm seeing. But there's always these little nuances of, well, that's just a little bit different than I expected. There's too much data and there's too much time. And those two together, you just sometimes you see something and then it's a matter of diving down and understanding it. And the computer or the software's doing the work, but why is that answer coming out that way? I need to understand that. And then once you're able to understand that, then you know what the variable is or the variables are that are impacting the results. And as Chris was saying, those are the variables you start to focus on. And then you make a little change. Well, what happens if the investments make 1% more or they make 1% less? How does that impact the results of a withdrawal strategy or Roth conversion numbers? And it's like, well, that's the trigger point. That's what's making the big difference. That's what we have to watch going forward. We have a plan, and now we know the critical parts of your plan, and we know updates and where we're looking at, you know, the things that are changing for you, what those items are, and when to start looking at them.
So let me circle back to their question and answer it in my way. Mm-hmm. And the single sentence question they have, and then we'll move on to the next question. After all this, just to remind everyone, their question was, or they're curious about, we want to weigh higher conversions versus higher Medicare payments due to higher income, future tax increases on my wife as a single, higher tax, higher tax brackets for my daughters, future tax increases from Washington, and future RMDs. All of those they want to consider. The way you consider all that, use the right tool. It's really going to take software in order to do this efficiently. Doing this type of analysis with that many variables by hand is not particularly practical. So we would, if someone was coming to us, this was a question for a podcast, but if they were coming to us interested in a, you know, client planner relationship, my response to them would be, you are ripe for what we call an advanced tax analysis. That's where Bob's going to use this tool we're describing to really investigate all these things. Then we'll swing back. We'll show you which of these things is really what's worth worrying about, and lay out in front of you the information so that you can then pick one of the paths that looks most attractive to you. So I know the next question is related to this one, but why don't you go ahead and dig into that second question we have.
Yeah, we thought we would kind of combine the two since they're going to be kind of similar, but it gives you a little different scenario for the second one, just so it's a little bit nice to have something to kind of compare the first one to. And this one's from, we can give out nicknames, right, Chris?
Well, we call them all George, yeah.
Do we really?
We do.
Georgie girl.
Okay. That's fine, because yeah. They must be a listener, because we call people either George or Georgette. Since you haven't heard it, I'll show you where that came from. I'll play for it. And the people, we haven't played it on the podcast for a while. This will remind everyone where we came up with George as the nickname for everyone.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So that's a Looney Tunes connection, obviously. That was the Abominable Snowman, which is always fun to hear Jim try to say. but where, way back when we started the radio show, this was before the podcast, when we did the radio show, we wanted to keep, protect people's anonymity, or as Jim would pronounce it, anonymity. we called him George because he had he has a love. Jim has a love for this particular cartoon. I'm a fan too. I don't like Daffy Duck, but the Abominable Snowman and Bugs Bunny were top of my list when I was young. So anyway, so Georgia Girl is sending us this email. So go ahead.
I didn't realize. I heard you guys use the word George and Georgia and stuff, but I didn't realize where that came from till now, and I certainly recognize that cartoon when you played it.
Yeah, that's where that comes from. Yeah.
So she's been a longtime listener. Question about 210 planning. My husband is age 65, 9 years older than I am, so that would put her like 56. Mm-hmm. He's retired, but not yet claiming Social Security. I am still working and making about $175,000 a year. Longevity runs on my side, but not his. I'm thinking our retirement planning sequence should be 1-2-0. Zero, since inheritance for a child is not a concern. So she's thinking ahead. I'm a lot younger. You know, his family genetics maybe aren't great. And so if me, the one, in this case, her, the one, could be him, the one, but in this case, her, the one, is going to be a one for a long time. What planning should we be doing, you know, now when you have time to plan? And, you know, I talk to clients a lot, and the earlier you're looking at these kind of situations, the better, because there's a window. And if you come in too late in that window, and I'm just going to throw out a number, like age 70 is getting almost too late. There's not a lot of strategies left. Mm-hmm. So she's well ahead of this time frame and thinking about it at the right time.
Yeah, this is very much like driving a boat. If you're going to run into something, the farther away you make a slight adjustment, it can, you know, have you easily avoid the issue. In this case, we're talking about taxes, and the boat's a metaphor here, but or like it's the land that you're going to run into, or the iceberg, if we're talking Titanic here. If you wait till you're too close, there's no way you're going to make enough evasive maneuvers to avoid it. There's still going to be the pain of hitting the iceberg. If the Titanic had turned sooner, it would have easily missed it. But it was too late, right? They noticed it way too late. Same thing here. You've got to the farther out you can plan for it, you can make little adjustments that can pay off huge dividends as far as not dividends themselves, but tax savings overall. If you can identify something that can be done early over a period of time, it's the effect can be cumulative a lot of times. So that's kind of how I describe it to people. Imagine driving a boat. Don't get too close to the scary thing, the taxes, before you decide to turn the wheel.
And that sounds perfectly good. That's exactly a good way of looking at it. It takes a long time and a lot of distance to try to make those corrections. And she goes on, she does give us a little breakdown of their taxable, or their never taxable. Their Roth is 12%, 38% always taxable, and 50% maybe taxable. And the total net worth is about $2.5 million. So I did the math. It kind of breaks down to Roth, $300,000, IRA, or 401k, $950,000, and then $1,250,000 in broker accounts. And sometimes we get these questions, and you know, we don't know the unrealized gains in the broker account. And there's a lot of information that we would certainly go back if we were going to go even to the first step of trying to figure this out. There's a lot more information that we would gather, but these questions are nice because they kind of give you just a general topic with some easy numbers that we can kind of start to talk about. She goes on to kind of finish up. Will the widower tax hurt me? If it does hurt me, it can't hurt me as much as she references a Jim joke and how she was laughing about that. So the Jim stuff was funnier than the widower penalty, I guess.
We lost the bet with you. That wasn't that the one where we bet him that he couldn't go the whole show calling everybody the correct name?
I think that was the bet. I remember that bet with Jim.
And it was a long show. It was like an hour and 15, 20 minutes long. And he made it to 2 minutes to go on the show. And then I don't remember what he called you, but it wasn't Bob.
It was a little stumble. He sort of caught himself, but I think we overruled him. He lost.
Yeah. No, he called you Pete or something, and it was done. And that was. I'm glad she brought that back up because that is a happy memory. So anyway, go ahead.
So, you know, it's just, will it hurt me? Well, it's gonna hurt you tax wise. And you know, to really understand if it's gonna hurt you a little bit or it's gonna hurt you quite a bit, we'd have to again program in and run all the numbers, you know, and you know, for 30 years or longer for you. And so we would have to do that. But some things to consider, you know, there's about, well, one is she's still working and we don't know for how much longer. She doesn't say, and maybe she's not sure. But if she works for 4 more years or 14 more years, that's a big difference in the planning, because with wages coming in already at the near the top of the 22% bracket, you know, there's things that we can do. You know, there are some Roth conversion strategies that we could look at. Maybe having her switch her contributions if she's contributing right now. I'm sure she is. But knowing when that's going to kind of stop, that's kind of like the beginning of the window. And then we can kind of start looking at, you know, a Roth conversion withdrawal strategy to ultimately what we want to do is bring those RMDs down. So the RMDs are running through, well, a smaller number is running through potentially a single bracket.
Right. And that's, so her question is it going to hurt me? The first thing I'd ask is, well, what is your intention? If your intention is to defer, meaning leave that roughly million, you said 950, but right about $1 million of always taxable money. If you're intending to leave that untouched until you're forced to take it out at RMDs, you're creating a ticking tax time bomb, to use an Ed Slot term. That's what he came up with. You're just building that up, then faced with RMDs. And if you happen to be single at the time those are coming out, it's a big penalty. It's going to be very painful. But you hit the nail on the head. If she's going to retire soon, she'll have a big tax planning window where it's possible simply choosing a distribution order, taking from those always taxable accounts first while they can spread those distributions out over their delay period, you know, and until 72 and before they turn on all their Social Security, if they have no other regular recurring taxable income coming in, they could get a lot out. They could, you know, do that and or conversions during that period. But if they're going to work, if she's going to work a lot longer, that fills up a bunch of those lower tax brackets and then makes any additional distributions or conversions higher taxable rates on those. And then you have to weigh that against, you know, doing that proactively versus the exposure you'll have as a widow. So there are a couple moving parts here, but it all starts with kind of what's the baseline intent. If you were intending to defer, which is the common approach, defer. Somehow people think that pushing off the tax payment until later is always better. We're seeing time and time again that ticking tax time bomb can be so damaging later on that it can make perfect sense to be paying taxes sooner than later on this money when it's under your control instead of being forced upon you due to these arbitrary RMD rules. There could be a huge, I would say that if that was your intent, you should change your intent. It's likely I would be shocked if that turns out to be the optimal approach for her.
Me too. I would, you know, in part of it's because she's young and 56 is, you know, she's 15 years away from RMDs. And so if I look at her, you know, her 950 or $1 million right now accounts, by the time the RMD years hit for her, they're likely to be somewhere between 1.8 to 2.2 million, depending on the growth that she has in those accounts and how conservative or aggressive she is. And so really what you're looking at is not a $950,000 RMD number, but a $2 million RMD number, which is about $70,000 year one. And she's got a, you know, she's clearly has decent earnings. So she's had decent earnings. She's going to have a nice Social Security benefit added on. And I kind of ran some just quick numbers based on if she just stays course with really no planning. And if she's single at age 72, if that's just the way it works out, her, you know, her bracket, their income as a married filing jointly at that point in time would probably still be in the 12% bracket or at the very end. Now, that's higher than the 12% bracket now, but we have 15 years of bracket increases at 2 or 2.5% a year. So we have to factor all that in. Again, luckily, our software handles that part too. But it's likely the first year of her RMDs that the 12% bracket for married filing jointly would be about $116,000, which is just about where they would be. Now, if she's single at that same point in time, she would be in what is now the 22% bracket, which would be the 25% bracket or higher based on changes. So analytically, before we run all the numbers and just look at everything, it's likely she's going to be in a double tax rate situation in 15 years if she's single versus married.
Which the odds of that happening for her are greater because of the age difference between the spouses. The fact that the older spouse is male and the degree of the difference between the ages increases statistically the likelihood of her being a lone survivor for an extended period of time. So she's right to be concerned, but she is talking about it at the right time. Remember our boat analogy, right? She's a ways out from hitting the reef or the iceberg or whatever visualization that you want. And making some changes now could help her avoid that kind of the pain and put her in the driver's seat and control the tax situation. She isn't going to have as much control while working because, again, she's going to be navigating on top of that $175,000 she's earning every year. But getting her ducks in a row so that when she does retire, she's ready to start this process of tax strategy is a good idea. If she's close to retirement, now's when to talk about it. If she's 5 to 7 years away, this is probably a little early. It's good she's thinking about it, but 5 to 7 years from now, the tax laws are likely to be different. So this is something she should keep on the radar and circle around back to it when she gets a little bit closer or if she decides to do something different with work. But perfect types of variables to be investigating for her and customizing it to her situation with the likelihood of a widow situation for possibly decades.
Yeah, very good. So how are we doing on time, Chris? Do we have a few more minutes?
We have a few more minutes if you have more to say, or if that's it, we can go either one.
I was going to just give one other little example. I just kind of came across within the past week or so. I was working on one of our advanced tax analysis, presentation. And I was working with clients, they were right around 60 years old, and they had accumulated about $9 million in retirement assets. And we ran we did the full programming, and we went through everything together, and we were looking at things, and we were looking at, their current ages of around 60, and then we were looking at what their accounts would look like around age 80. In their case, their income and investment income and pensions and Social Security and everything was kind of covering their spending. So their net worth over the 20-year period stayed about the same. And we looked and we said, well, yeah, about 20 years, you're age 80, things are at $9 million. And, they were like, well, that seems like we're going through a lot of effort. We're not really, it doesn't seem like we're gaining anything. We have $9 million on paper and we're going to have $9 million on paper. So I said, well, let's look, because what do we have in those accounts in 20 years? And if we stayed course without any Roth conversions or any kind of planning, you have $0 in your Roth accounts in 20 years because you have $0 now and you're not planning on contributing anything. So we looked at that. And then we took the software and we looked at the 20-year lookout period. And we looked at this Roth conversion strategy that we had programmed in. And it showed $2.8 million in Roth. Out of that $9 million, $2.8 million was in Roth in 20 years. So I said, you converted a third of your net worth, retirement net worth, into tax-free dollars. So you have to really, that was the huge impact to what this planning was about. We had to prepay some taxes. Your net worth takes a little hit. The recovery is tax-free. You get back to the same point. But at that point in your life, at age 80, you have a third of your assets are tax-free, very valuable to you or both of you, again, the two or the one, very valuable to have access to tax-free money, simplifies your life a little bit. And then your beneficiaries are looking at a nicer inheritance.
Yeah, and that really connects right to our always taxable dollars, maybe taxable dollars, and never taxable dollars. A dollar isn't a dollar isn't a dollar. It depends on where it is sitting. So here, Bob said, you know, on paper, the total amount projected, the dollar face value, or what we'd call the nominal value, doesn't really appear to be that different. It's $9 million. You know, why are we even going through all these gyrations? Well, having a bunch of it, having a third of it tax-free versus maybe or always taxable is a very, very different circumstance. Those dollars are worth more when they're in a tax-free situation, because when you owe taxes, those dollars you're staring at aren't all yours. Some of those dollars belong to Uncle Sam in your, whatever you want to call your state entity, if you live in a state with state income taxes. Those aren't all yours. So it looks like you have a certain amount of wealth, and in reality, it's less. It's less than that. If it's tax-free dollars, that's all yours. That's all yours. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I have seen that too, where it doesn't appear on paper at first look to make that much difference. But when you look at the makeup of the dollars, the characteristics, the tax characteristics of the dollars become so much more attractive down the road for you. And then here, because it sounds like they're going to leave a bunch of money behind if by 80 they're still not spending much, going through that much, your beneficiaries. And with the loss of the stretch, tax-free for beneficiaries is, just leagues above the alternative, where you leave behind a tax nightmare for your hopefully successful kids. So, good show. Anything else that you want to say?
You know, I think that covers everything kind of wanted to talk about and go over. And obviously, Chris wraps things up, but we're here. And any follow-up to anything that you're hearing or questions, certainly reach out to our office.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I know that if somebody was interested in doing one of these advanced tax analysis exercises, I think we're kind of tight for the rest of this year. So we're probably, I just to set people's expectations, if you were looking for us to do it, and there's others out there, but just throwing out if you were interested in doing something like this with us, probably not taking any more of those on for the rest of this year, correct?
That is true. We're kind of filled up for the full-blown advanced tax analysis. Now, we do some simplified versions where if you've decided, yes, I want to do a Roth conversion, I know it's right for me, and I just need help figuring out the amount, here's all my income and situation for this year, we can help you with that still. Those are a little bit, obviously, they're a lot easier to get done and a lot easier to get done timely. So we can still do those for you. If you're interested, you can kind of reach out. And certainly if we're starting that process and then you say, well, I really want the full analysis for next year, that kind of gets you in the loop a little bit.
Yeah. So these, for those of you who are planning ahead, like these folks shouldn't be a big issue timing wise. Any last minute, super extensive analysis may not happen with us, at least in 2020 here. We've got less than 2 months to go. So and we're doing a lot of other tax things, end of year tax things for people. So that's why the tax area is booked up a little bit for the rest of the year. But after the first of the year, there'll be some, obviously some busyness to tax prep season. But after, towards the tail end of the first quarter of 2021, if you're looking for really sweet, what I think is sweet, advanced tax analysis with the software we're talking about, just let us know. And we can give you some more details about that. And the way to learn a little bit more about us and see how to connect with us, go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. On there, you'll find a contact form. You can suggest a topic for the show, either the EDU show like we did today, which is kind of a focused topic show, or the Q&A show, where we have a random set of questions that we usually tackle. You can send those questions in through that contact form, or if you're interested in learning how to work with us, that same contact form can be used. So we really appreciate everybody listening. And Bob, thanks for coming on. I'll see you next time we do another tax-focused show. To have a good weekend, and we'll talk to everybody else next week.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.